On today's show, we discuss what would it take for the Rockets to be in play for the number one overall pick in the 2022 NBA draft with Philip Rossman-Reich from Locked On Magic. Is the Orlando Magic control the direction of this year's NBA draft? Then some thoughts on game one from Celtics Warriors in the NBA Finals. The Celtics upsetting the Warriors on their own home turf. Thoughts on that game and as those two teams relate to what the Houston Rockets are trying to build here. And then lastly, Locked On Sports today's Peter Bukowski interviewed none other than Houston Rockets legend Robert Horry, who shared his thoughts on the finals matchup between Warriors and Celtics. We're going to have all of that coming up right here at Locked On Rockets.
This is Mission Control, Houston.
Ignition sequence start.
With the second pick in the 2021 NBA Draft, the Houston Rockets select Jalen Green.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep getting better every day. I'm going to keep perfecting my craft. And every time I step on that floor, I'm coming.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's up? Welcome to another edition of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and credentialed media member. I'm also the host of Locked On NBA Mondays, host of the State of the Rockets podcast, as well as the founder of ClutchCityControlRoom.com. Be sure to follow along on Twitter at JT Gatlin. The show, of course, at Locked On Rockets. As always, appreciate you for making LOR your first listen each and every day. Now, for today's episode, we're going to be joined by Philip Rossman-Reich here in just a moment from Locked On Magic to discuss how the Rockets could potentially get their hands on the number one overall selection in this year's 2022 NBA draft, what the Orlando Magic draft strategy is in this year's draft, what they are potentially looking for. Then we'll discuss some of my takeaways from game one of the NBA Finals between the Celtics and Warriors, the Celtics upsetting the Warriors in the Bay in game one. Kind of some thoughts on how those two teams look from a roster construction standpoint, how their players, you know, the types of players they have at their disposal and how that relates to what the Houston Rockets are trying to build here. And then lastly, Locked On Sports Today's Peter Bukowski was joined by none other than seven-time NBA champion and Houston Rockets legend Robert Horry to share his thoughts on the NBA Finals. And he talks a little Houston Rockets in there as well. We'll run that back in the third segment of today's show. So without further ado, let's go ahead and dive in and talk about whether or not the Rockets could even get their hands on the number one overall pick in this year's draft. Joining us now is Philip Rossman-Reich from Locked On Magic. Philip, welcome to the program. Honestly, Philip, first off, congratulations on getting the number one overall selection in this year's draft. I'm upset that the Rockets didn't get it, but I'm happy for you that the Magic got it. And that's why you're here on the show today to talk about just how the Rockets could potentially get their hands on that number one overall selection. And I guess that's as good a place to start as any is just, you know, with where the Magic are at right now, I mean, is there even remotely a world where they would consider trading out of that number one overall spot and trading down with the Rockets at pick number three?
I mean, I think it's always possible. I mean, the understanding that I have of the way Jeff Weltman and his front office operates is they'll listen to everything. Like, they're not going to close the world to them. And obviously, you have to be a smart GM. You have to be a pretty dumb GM to kind of completely close the world off unless you're just dealing with like a generational talent here, which I don't think we're dealing with in this draft. So I think that the Magic will take calls. I think they'll listen. Now, what will it take for them to move? It's going to take a lot. You look back at the history of trading the number one pick, it's happened before. And it's usually you got to get a king's ransom for it. I'm not saying that this year's draft is the Chris Webber draft, but in 1993, the Magic had the top pick. They ended up trading it. And a lot of it was just a kind of a victim of circumstance. You know, the Magic, Chris Webber was far and away the number one pick that year. I think everyone understood that. Orlando didn't need that. They had Shaquille O'Neal, an all-star in his rookie year, kind of very clearly on his way to superstardom. That proved out to be pretty correct. And so the Magic were in a position where they could trade him and they could ask for a lot. And, you know, the joke that's said here in Orlando is Pat Williams, the GM at the time, when Don Nelson of the Golden State Warriors called them up to say, hey, we'd like to trade the third pick to move up to one. What else will it take? They said, give us six more firsts. And that was kind of the starting point of negotiations. They got down to three first round picks. More recently, obviously, the Boston Celtics traded the draft rights to Markelle Fultz to Boston or to Philadelphia for the third overall pick. It took a pretty big ransom in order to get that too. So it would take a lot, and I think it's kind of dependent on where the Magic are at. This is, you know, that Boston team was probably a little bit better than finishing with the first pick that year anyway. This Magic team needs an influx of talent. They need an influx of top end talent a lot. So even though all three of these guys are really, really, really close, it would take a lot for the Magic to kind of give up the choice of those three in order to get there.
So if I came to you with an offer of pick number three, and then the Rockets also hold pick number 17 in this year's NBA draft, that probably doesn't cut the mustard, huh?
That probably wouldn't do it enough, especially kind of in this draft, which is, you know, after those top three and maybe after another group of like four or five. I don't think it's considered to be a particularly strong draft. I'm personally trying to figure out how to package Terrence Ross and my two second round picks to move back up into the first round in the 20 range. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, who do I actually want if I'm going to do this plan? Like that's the trickier part for me, is like, I want to do this, but I don't know who I want quite yet. So it would take a lot more than that. And I think the Magic, just, they're a really young team. You know, I actually calculated the average age of the players left on the roster, I think, is like 23, 24 years old. This is a really young team. And so I kind of think the last thing the Magic need are more young players. That they'll probably want some veteran help to kind of start filling out this roster for what they hope could be maybe a surprise play and run, but certainly a better season next year.
You know, I think the Rockets are kind of ultimately in this, at least as far as the evaluation standard goes, kind of in a similar boat to the Magic, where these top three prospects, when you look at the three big men at the top of the draft, are kind of so close together. The margins kind of razor thin between these guys, to where it's not necessarily worth it probably to spend a king's ransom to try to move up to get your choice of, you know, between Jabari or Chet or Paolo. You're just going to be content to walk away with one of those three, which is exactly the position the Rockets find themselves at, pick number three. But Philip, I feel like a lot of Rockets fans in particular are kind of just walking away with the assumption, and again, a lot of the signs are pointing towards Jabari to the Magic at number one, more than likely Chet Holmgren at number two to the Oklahoma City Thunder. But I haven't completely, like, you know, subscribed to that notion that that's exactly the way the draft is going to play out, with Paolo Banchero being the guy that's left at number three. Is there a chance that the Magic could deviate and go elsewhere with that number one overall pick and either take Chet at number one, or maybe a bit of a reach, but maybe even go Paolo Banchero number one overall?
100%. I think there are good arguments for all three of these players, Jabari Smith, Paolo Banchero, and Chet Holmgren, to go number one. And again, they all fit needs that the Magic have. You know, the Magic need shooting. Jabari Smith obviously fits that. He has the length that the Magic typically like. He plays really good defense. That's stuff the Magic like. The Magic need a primary score. There's no one in this draft that's better at being kind of that primary score than Paolo Banchero, and they need a guy that they can dump the ball to and get them 20 a night, or get them a big basket at big moments. By the same token, you know, the Magic love their length. That there's no player that's more unique in this draft than Chet Holmgren, and you know, he is a guy that fits all the marks that the Magic like. He's a good 3-point shooter for his size. He is a great shot blocker. He's a good defender. The questions about his size are certainly something that they can cover for. But I also think that Orlando has a roster that can fit Chet Holmgren in really well, with Wendell Carter as a solid backstop center to handle the bigger centers in the league. And so I think that the Magic, they haven't, you know, at least at the time of this recording, have not brought in any of the big name players yet into their building. I don't think the Magic are ready to make a final decision until they do that. And there's going to be a lot to separate. And I wouldn't surprise me if the Magic pick Chet. I personally was taking Paolo in a lot of our pre-lottery mock drafts. Nothing would surprise me with the Magic at this point.
Definitely going to be an interesting ride up until and including the NBA draft, of course. Philip, do us a favor. Let our listeners know where they can track you down at, so that they can get a kind of a Magic angle of how things are, you know, approaching the NBA draft.
Yeah, absolutely. The best place to check me out is obviously on the Locked On Magic podcast. We're doing a ton of talk about how these players fit. I'm sure it's very relevant to the Rockets roster as well, as we're both kind of at the beginning stages of our rebuilds here as franchises. So sure, it's a lot of similar conversation and similar perspective and similar thinking about how to go through these players and through these prospects. You can also check me out on OrlandoMagicDaily.com, where I do a lot of my written work, again, looking at the draft as a whole, as well as a big offseason ahead for the Orlando Magic.
That's it for our conversation with Philip Rosman-Reich from Locked On Magic. Coming up, I want to share some additional thoughts on the Rockets pick situation, trading up, trading down, all that good stuff, as well as thoughts and takeaways from game one of the NBA Finals as it relates to the Houston Rockets. We're going to get there in just a moment after a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar, because when it comes to protein bars, you got to check out Built Bar. They're the number one protein bar on the market, and for a very good reason. Actually, for a bunch of good reasons. Every single bar is coated in 100% delicious chocolate. They're not gritty or chalky like other protein bars out there, right? You're never going to get like a weird consistency with them. The flavors that they have are just incredible to choose from. You got raspberry, strawberry, cookies and cream, salted caramel, mint chocolate brownie, peanut butter. My personal favorite is coconut brownie chunk. You really can't go wrong with a single flavor on their menu. Every single bar is low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber. Amazing. If you're on a keto diet, amazing. If you're trying to cut back a little bit, maybe lose a little bit of weight, you can check them out. Just go to built.com. Use promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your very next order of the best tasting protein bars on the market. Again, that's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, appreciate you for making LOR your first listen each and every day. Right now, huge important favor to ask of you. Locked On has put together a survey so we can learn more about our listeners and make your favorite Locked On podcast even better. I hope LOR is your favorite Locked On podcast. If it's not, I will go shed a tear after I'm done recording. But this is your opportunity to tell us what you like and don't like about Locked On Podcast. Go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey right now to get started. It won't take very long, and everyone that completes the survey can qualify for a chance to win one of 10 $100 Ticketmaster gift cards to take our audience survey. Go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey. We appreciate your help and feedback. You can also just let me know whether or not you like the show in the comments. I do read all of those. Shout out to most recent comment on the YouTube page the other day that said this was a trash page. I appreciate your input. You're the best. All right. So right now I want to kind of continue on. We just finished our conversation with Philip Rosman-Reich, and for all intents and purposes, it basically seems like there's really not a chance for the Rockets to trade up to the number one overall selection, right? Unless the Magic, have decided, internally that Paolo Banchero is their guy and they feel like they can safely trade down to 3 and still pick him up without OKC meddling at pick number 2, which is still, a possibility. I will say that based on some of what, Philip Rosman-Reich was saying is that, there's really no clear indicator the direction the Magic are going to go. A lot of the signs are pointing to Jabari Smith, yes. But the Magic still have to bring those 3 guys in for workouts. And if one of those guys comes in and absolutely blows them away internally, past all the stuff that we have, the publicly available data, all that, it could very easily sway their decision to where then they feel the need to want to go with a Paolo Banchero, or maybe they want to go with a Chet Holmgren number one overall instead of Jabari. And if that happens, it completely changes the outcome of the rest of the pecking order at the top of the draft. So the Rockets' fate isn't even in their own hands, but they could still be players when it comes to the Orlando Magic and when it comes to the Oklahoma City Thunder, depending on where those evaluations fall. And that's why these discussions are so important, just to kind of gauge how other fan bases are viewing the draft, how other teams kind of are evaluating the top-end talent of the draft. And again, I think that the margin between these top prospects is so razor thin. There's not like a clear cut number one guy. Everybody's got their favorite of the bunch, right? Like, again, I've got Jabari at the top of my pecking order, right? Other people have Banchero. Other people have Chet Holmgren. There are some people that think Jaden Ivey's the best player in the draft, right? Like, and there are arguments for all of them is the thing. And there's arguments for and against all of them. So at this point, I am content with the number 3 pick. I'm content with whichever direction the Rockets decide that they want to go with it, because at the end of the day, I'm going to fix that because that's pissing me off. At the end of the day, right, there's not a huge gap between any of these top 3 or even top 4 draft prospects to where you'd be upset if you missed out on one of them, right? So, I mean, I'm going to be a little bit upset because I think Jabari's still my guy, but I will cheer for and root for and want to see the abundant success for Paolo Banchero's career if he is here in Houston once the draft is ultimately done and gone. But with that, I do want to kind of change gears here for a second. Talk a little bit about the first game of the NBA Finals, the Boston Celtics upsetting the Golden State Warriors in the Bay on their home turf. And it's worth noting that the Celtics outscored the Golden State Warriors by 24 points in the fourth quarter. However, Nemanja Bjelica sunk a three at the end of the game that did not matter. It was inconsequential. It was game over. It was the final possession of the game for the Warriors. And in that moment, before the three was sunk, the Celtics had outscored the Golden State Warriors by a margin of 27 points in the fourth quarter. Karma's a bitch, ain't it? Like, I just, like, that is, ooh, that 27 was beautiful to see. And again, from a Rockets perspective, feels great to be able to watch, you know, your arch nemesis just completely flounder on the biggest stage. Anyways, I'm gonna revel in this Warriors loss and hopefully what is ultimately a Celtics championship for a while. And for a couple of different reasons, because I highlighted this at halftime during the during game one between these two teams. This Celtics core was built off the backs of that previous trade with the Nets that basically secured them all of the Nets draft capital for like the next decade, right? In the trades for Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, and you know, the Nets tried to put together this aging superstar team to be relevant, and they completely like collapsed all of that. And the Boston Celtics reaped the benefits of those rewards and really molded their core utilizing all that draft capital. Jaylen Brown being the biggest name that is a direct result of that trade. And the Rockets are in that exact same scenario now because they're the team that holds all the future draft capital from the Brooklyn Nets. They're the team that is going to have access to all this, you know, all these extra draft picks, all this extra draft capital over the next, you know, 5-6 years. And they could very well be the next team that is in the finals 4 or 5 years from now, where you're looking back and you're like, you know what? How did the Rockets get in the finals? Oh yeah, the Nets gift wrapped them a whole bunch of assets for an aging superstar that didn't quite pan out in a Nets jersey. And that's exactly what happened. James Harden went to Brooklyn, didn't work out, and now he's in Philadelphia. And honestly, again, the way that James Harden has looked in the last, you know, season and a half or so physically doesn't look like the same Houston version of MVP James Harden that we'd become accustomed to. And it might honestly, Rafael Stone, tip of the cap, right? He got away from James Harden at the exact right moment because the stress that would have been put on James Harden to continue playing at that elite MVP caliber level and carrying teams here in Houston, there's no way he would have been able to continue to do that, right? I mean, this is a James Harden that put up 9 shots, right? 9 shots in an elimination game next to Joel Embiid, you know, in a Sixers uniform. Just not the same James Harden. And I do wish him the best. I hope he recovers. I hope he, you know, rehabs and comes back, and maybe he goes plant-based like CP3 and comes back an even better version of himself next season. But right now, the decision to move on from Harden is looking, you know, better and better with each passing day by general manager Rafael Stone. Not only that angle of, you know, how the Celtics managed to get to the finals, how they kind of accelerated their rebuilding process with the draft capital and the draft haul from the Nets, who were, right, still the New Jersey Nets at the time, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not going to get into more geography on this show because the last time I tried to say that Brooklyn was upstate, I had about 40 of y'all tell me that Brooklyn's a borough and it's what, downstate or something. I don't know. Anyways, I'm not going to get into geography on this. This is not Locked on Geography. Okay. It's Locked on Rockets. And we're talking about the Warriors and Celtics. I love this. Anyways, so I will say that one of the observations that I had kind of throughout the playoffs, and especially now that we're in the finals, right, looking at these two teams, the way they match up with one another, size is so important in the NBA. And this might be like a dumb like observation, but it's just one that I feel is worth mentioning, especially when you look at how the Celtics have been able to deal with and kind of bulldoze their way through the Eastern Conference right now. They have size, they've got switchability, they've got length. And again, some of these traits might be, you know, very apparent. I say, yeah, of course you want that on an NBA player. But I think it's so much harder to say, of course you want that, to then go out and get it, right? Like, even there was this moment in game one where Marcus Smart, he had to box out, I believe it was Kevon Looney or Draymond Green. It was one of the Warriors bigs. And Marcus Smart is a big point guard, right? He's, you know, 6'2", 6'3", but he's built, right? He's got a strong upper body, and he can kind of like muscle with bigger players. And so Marcus Smart was able to effectively box out Golden State Warriors bigs on switches. And it gave me kind of flashbacks to when the Rockets did play the Warriors and they had CP3 at the point guard position. Again, I'm not going to say Marcus Smart's better than CP3. I'm just trying to highlight the differences here and how they kind of impacted the game, in the sense of there were so many different opportunities where CP3 would be guarding a big on a switch because of the Rockets switch everything defense, and wouldn't effectively be able to box them out because he's only 6 feet tall. You know, he doesn't have the strength to really push a big out of the paint the way that Marcus Smart could. And so there's just, again, that observation of, it goes back to that quote that Rafael Stone had where he talked about, you know, if you have a bigger, stronger player who's as equally skilled as a smaller player, the bigger, stronger player is going to be better, right? Because the game rewards height and athleticism. And so all this is stemming from, I'm really tired of the Rockets being one of the smallest teams in the league. And even though I internally have my own, like, you know, evaluations of Jaden Ivey versus Paolo Banchero, I wouldn't be upset if the Rockets took Jaden Ivey at three. I don't see them taking Jaden Ivey at three, because even though the margins are razor thin, and even though I think, again, Jaden Ivey might have a bit of a higher ceiling, possibly, Paolo Banchero's still got an insanely high ceiling as well. And he's an incredibly talented player. And of the top picks, he is probably the most skilled and polished, like, offensively. And then not only that, he's the best athlete with the best size of the top picks, right? Like, he's a better athlete. It's like Chet's got more size, sure. Paolo Banchero's the better athlete, and he's about 6'10". So he's a little bit smaller than Chet, but a significantly better athlete. Between Jabari and Paolo, Paolo's still the better athlete. And then even though Jaden Ivey has this insane athleticism, this insane burst, he and Jalen Green would be the most athletic backcourt in the NBA for the next decade. Doesn't matter. Paolo's the bigger player. So taking away some of those points and just looking again at the rest of the Celtics roster, right? Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, a pair of lengthy wings who can switch and guard, you know, various positions. They can guard smaller players. They can guard bigger guys. And then with Rob Williams and with Al Horford, and Al Horford to me is really the key to what makes that Celtics defense tick. You know, he's 6'9", 6'10" on a good day. Insanely long wingspan, is able to switch out onto the perimeter, can guard guards, is a smart, savvy defender, knows exactly what he's doing on that side of the basketball to impact the game in a positive way. There's just so many takeaways from this finals team. And when you're looking at these two teams and how they're experiencing so much success, it's finding those types of players that can be impactful on the defensive end, right? A lot of people coming into the Warriors-Celtics series, myself included, kind of maybe thought that the Celtics didn't have enough firepower to go toe-to-toe with the Warriors. But what wound up happening is it didn't really matter, because the Celtics defense was able to pitch shutouts for stretches of the games because their defense is just that good. And so for the Rockets to ultimately get to where they want, you know, they're going to have to put together a top-tier defense, because it doesn't matter if you're the number one offense in the NBA, because the playoffs, everything slows down. Everything becomes a, like, you know, stuck in the mud. It becomes a grinded out, you know, ugly type of basketball when you make it to the finals, when you make it to the playoffs even. And to be able to win at the highest level, you got to be able to defend. And so that's always been kind of my biggest reservation with Paolo Banchero, is like, what type of a defender is he going to be able to be at the NBA level? He's got all the tools to do it. He's got all the tools to be a great defender. Can he become a great defender is the other question mark. We've seen Jalen Green take strides on defense, and he also has the tools to be a great defender. When you're that gifted athletically, the sky's the limit for you on the defensive end of the floor. He's still got to bulk up a little bit more, but Paolo already doesn't have to worry about that. Paolo's got the size. He's got the athleticism to be an elite defender. Hopefully it can translate at the NBA level. So with that, those are just some, you know, random miscellaneous thoughts on the NBA Finals as it relates back to the Houston Rockets and what they're trying to build and accomplish here in Houston. So coming up, we're going to run back Peter Bukowski's interview on Locked On Sports Today with none other than Houston Rockets legend Robert Horry. We're going to get there in just one moment. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, appreciate you for making LOR your first listen each and every day. For your second listen, go check out the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast. Host Raphael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and author of the NBA Big Board newsletter is joined by Richard Stamen, Sam Ferris, and Lee Thulin, giving fans an in-depth look into the NBA draft, mock draft, player rankings, and of course, Big Boards. It's free and available wherever you get your podcast, wherever you listen to this podcast. Now let's go ahead and dive into Peter Bukowski's interview with none other than Robert Horry.
The Golden State Warriors are minus 150, the favorites in the NBA Finals against the Boston Celtics. Joining me now, Robert Horry, seven-time NBA champion, is here courtesy of Bet Online. Check out Bet Online for all the up-to-date lines on the NBA Finals, Finals MVP, Finals props, and each and every game line. This is great to have you here. Why do you think, because the line has moved a little bit in the Celtics' favor, why do you think there are people that like the Celtics matchup against the Warriors?
Because the smart people know defense wins championships. Mm. And if you look at the Celtics team, they got two players on that team that made the all-defensive team. You know, Smart, of course, defensive player of the year. But Robert Williams is one of those guys that is an eraser. He can block shots. He can, you know, he can erase a lot of mistakes that you make on the perimeter. And you think about it, you got Brown, Tatum, and Smart, who can get up on people defensively and funnel them to that guy. Next thing you know, he's getting blocked. And if you look at the way, you know, Horford has been playing, he's turning back the hands of time. He's blocking shots again. So if you, overall, I think that the Celtics is a better defensive team than the Warriors, because even though you have Draymond Green, Klay Thompson is not the Klay Thompson of old who can do the things he used to be able to do. And so I just think that's a big key for them, for the Celtics, that is.
How do you see Defensive Player of the Year Marcus Smart matching up with Steph Curry? Is that going to be something where you see that Marcus is going to pick him up 94 feet? Like, how do you think Smart is going to approach that assignment if he does get that assignment, which we assume he's going to?
But you know what? I don't think it's going to be a one-man job. If you look at the Celtics, they 1, 2, 3 are all athletic guys. And you go to the 2, Jaylen, and go to the Tatum, they get taller. You know, it's like, yeah, like the bars on a cell phone. And I think even though they like to do a lot of switching, I think they're perfect for this matchup. It's a perfect matchup for the Celtics and when they got the guards. And because, you know, Klay is going to be constant moving. And so, not the same as a Jimmy Butler or a Tyler Hero, but I think this, what they just did against the Heat, is like a prelude to what they're going to do. And so I think they're going to be fine defensively switching and getting ready for Steph.
It sounds like you like the Celtics in this one.
You know, all my Laker fans are going to be mad at me because they said you cannot wear anything green and you can never root for the Celtics. I'm not rooting for the Celtics. You know, I would like to see my former teammate, Ime Udoka, win his first championship. You know, so I would like for that to happen. But, you know, I just think being the basketball mindset, I just think that there's a good chance the Celtics could win this thing.
All right, so we have some odds here. Celtics in 6 is plus 375. Celtics in 7 is plus 650. If people are going to bet on it, what is your prediction? If you like Boston, 6, 7?
Hey, you know what? If you try to make some money, right? that's why you gamble. And so I will go with the Celtics in 7 because I think the Celtics have been a battle-tested team on the road. They've won a lot of games on the road. They just won the Eastern Conference on the road. And so I think they're ready. Not saying everybody would say, well, the Heat is a different monster than, you know, the Warriors and blah, blah, blah. But I still think it all boils down to having confidence and playing well on the road and believing that you can win on the road.
There's also been this discussion now, especially among Celtics fans, about what this Celtics team has had to face, particularly who Jason Tatum has had to face. Kevin Durant in the first round, Giannis Antetokounmpo in the second round, Jimmy Butler on a heater, no pun intended, for Miami. And now Steph Curry, you're talking about at least three Pantheon guys who are all time great players. Who do you think has the most on the line legacy wise in this series? For whom would that one title, you won 7, who would that one title mean the most for?
You know, I'm going to go off script a little bit and I'm going to stop people from thinking this is going to be the greatest run ever by the Celtics. That's not true. Because you got Hornacek, Karl Malone, you got Kevin Johnson, Charles Barkley, you got Dennis Rodman, MVP, David Robinson. Then you got Shaquille and Penny. Now that is the greatest run in back in 95. So when people say this might be the greatest run, stop it. You know what I'm saying? Because all these teams was 50, you know, 55, 50 plus win teams. And so I just think if you look at this game and you have to pick an MVP, you know, of course, it's going to be Tatum. But this run that the Celtics are on is incredible. You know, don't get me wrong, because they've been able to win on the road, which is key, because you have to run on the road in order to win championship. That's if, unless you have home court advantage and you protect your home court. But I just think overall, when you look at the makeup of these two teams, they're similar. You know, Golden State Warriors, they were the Celtics 6-7 years ago when they first entered the playoffs. And nobody thought they could win a championship. Next thing you know, they win a championship. Then the following season, they win all these games and don't win a championship. And then they get KD and they win two more. But I think if you look at the Celtics, there are so many similarities with these teams that people are always going to say, oh, let's go with the veteran leadership. Let's go with the fan favorite and Steph. You know, this thing about it, because everybody wants Steph to win, because we know he got robbed one time with the MVP in the finals. And then he took a step back and let KD come in to his team, which is Steph's team, and take two MVPs. And so I do think Steph has a lot to prove, and his legacy is on the line when it comes to this, because, you know, all the chatter now is about him not having an MVP in the finals, which we all know he was robbed of one. So let's be real about that.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at these MVP odds as you're talking about the MVP, and we expect Curry and Tatum right at the top in terms of the odds. You're not getting really good value there. I'm looking at Jaylen Brown, 10-1. Yeah. I'm looking at Draymond, 22-1. Like, if he really turned it up defensively, people forget in that game 7 against the Cavs, he had a triple-double in that game. He was the best Warrior on the floor in that game. I'm looking at Marcus Smart at 40-1. It seems like you can get some good value. And we've seen, including in this Warriors run, that it's not always the stars who win these finals MVPs.
It's true. You know, for me, if I wanted to take the odds, I'm going to eliminate the top three automatically. And I don't think Klay is, you know, Klay is a game 5, game 6 type of player. But me, I would go with Andrew Wiggins. If I had to pick someone with the odds, I would go with Andrew Wiggins, who is 20-1. And think about it. He has started to come into his own.
Yeah.
He, after that dunk on Luka, all of a sudden this dude is smiling big. He's enthusiastic. He's playing hard, and he's an all-star. And I think some people forget he was an all-star. I think this is a good way, in the biggest stage, to show everybody that the all-star committee didn't make a mistake. So if I had to take all the, because I don't think Draymond Green, he doesn't shoot enough, and he's gonna have to guard too many people, so he's gonna be all over the board. That, so if you look down that list of people and you want to say, oh, odds maker, for me, I would take Andrew Wiggins 20-1.
That is, I mean, that's bold. I love it. I think you're right that he seems to be a different player. Just in the Warriors, just in Golden State, he seems to have been unlocked a little bit, whether that's Steve Kerr, whether that's just him feeling more comfortable. We're talking about legacy. And you have been on some teams that have gone on these multi-year runs that have been what we might consider dynastic, right? There have been some discussions here. If the Warriors win one, that because it's the Klay, Steph, Draymond core with Steve Kerr, that this has to be considered part of the Warriors' run and that we have to call them a dynastic team. Where do you fall on that discussion? If they win one, are they a dynasty?
You know what? It's I will put them in that category as a dynasty. You know, because they was riddled with injuries,
right?
2 years, Klay was out, then Steph went out. You know, you say, okay, we'll give them a Phil Jackson asterisk by those 2 years. But if they were to get back to the mountaintop and win this year, I would put them, you know, you got one more step to be a dynasty. And then if they go to the finals again, then I would give them a dynasty. But, you know, think about this. They gave us a dynasty in the Lakers. We won 3 in a row. And next thing you know, they dismantled a team. They go back and lose. It's considered a dynasty. So, you know, to me, there's only been, you know, 3 dynasties in this: Bulls, the Celtics, and the Lakers, because they're in a situation where they went 6+ championships. You know, I that's what you look at. But in this day, in this era, you can give them a dynasty.
I would consider the Spurs, the Tim Duncan, Greg Popovich Spurs in that mix, but they never won back-to-back titles. And so it depends on how you want to qualify it. Sustained success, not always enough. I think if you're a Boston fan, you're going, why can't we have that sustained run? We've got these two young superstars, Marcus Smart, defensive player of the year, who's coming into his own a little bit defensively. It seems like they've unlocked some things with him as their pure point guard in initiating offense, because he doesn't have to create for everyone. They've got Tatum and Brown who can create for themselves. I mean, what do you think the chances are that they could be not the next dynasty, but the next team that you have to deal with in the Eastern Conference? Like, okay, they're going to be there every year until further notice.
You know, I think you look down that line and you says, okay, Tatum, first team, max. Brown, max. Smart, max. These are super max contracts these guys potentially can get. Right. So now, since I cover the Lakers got $40 million guys, $40 million guys. They can't get nobody else on the team unless they do some hell of a drafting, you know, and they get those guys that's going to be there. But it boils down to payday, man. If you're going to stick around and get paid, or you're going to have that one falter and say, oh, you know, we didn't win a championship, we need to make a move because, you know, they exploited us in this area. We need to get someone in, and they trade one of those guys. You know, people do dumb things like that. Well, GMs, I should say. So I think they have the potential to make a long run. They're just going to have to stick together and do what a Tim Duncan would do and say, you know what, I'm going to take less money. So you can sign a Tony Parker, you sign a Manu Ginobili. But are these guys now, you know, selfless enough with it, say, hey, you know what? I don't want to make $40 million. I make $30 million. You know, I don't think so. I think every guy now is trying to get their bag so they can say, you know what? At one point in my career, I was making $50-40 million, whatever it may be. So I don't – that's going to be the key, though. It boils down to money, if they can keep that team together.
All right, not a finals question, but I can't talk to Big Shot Bob and not ask you this question. Which of your big shots is your favorite?
You know, I grew up a Lakers fan, a huge Magic Johnson fan. And one of my biggest thrills before I even made it to the NBA, I got to play one-on-one with Magic when I was being scouted by the Lakers coming out of college, coming out of the University of Alabama. So the shot I made against the Sacramento Kings in 2001 to win that game is probably my favorite. And don't get me wrong, I love what I did in Houston. I love what I did in San Antonio. But everything I did in San Antonio was on the road, game five on the road. But this was at home in Staples Center. And the ego comes into play where you want to hear that crowd chant your name, man. And you run off the court and the crowd still chanting your name. You're in the locker room, you can still hear them chanting your name. So I think that shot, it takes over all the other shots just for the ego. You know, all as athletes got some type of ego. And I think for me, that just takes over because I had the Laker fans chanting my name. They wasn't chanting Shaq. They wasn't chanting Kobe. They were chanting Ori. So that's a big plus for me.
Hopefully you enjoyed Peter Bukowski's interview with Rockets legend and seven-time NBA champion Robert Ori. Hopefully you enjoyed the Rockets shout-outs that occurred throughout that conversation. Do you agree with Robert Ori? Do you have Celtics in seven? Do you have the Warriors winning the finals? Let me know in the comments. Let me know about your thoughts from our earlier discussion in the episode right now. And I called this before game one of the finals. So even though I'm recording this after game one of the finals, I called it before, posted on social media. Go check the receipts. My heart was telling me Celtics in seven. My brain was telling me Warriors in six. I don't know if game one has completely changed my perception of that. This Warriors team is incredibly talented. I can go wash my mouth out with soap for having to say that. But let me know your finals predictions. I'm curious how you feel about which direction this finals is going to go. But with that, that's going to do it for today's episode. As always, appreciate you so much for checking out the show. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, free and available on all podcast platforms. Also, check us out on YouTube. Go to YouTube, search Locked On Rockets, like, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. But as always, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.